Join us as we cover many an insane movie and numerous cult TV phenomenons. Are you ready to get jacked up? Are you with us? Then listen on.
Welcome back, and we got newcomers to the show. Nicole Newcomb, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Always delightful. So, we are just gonna do a brief summary of some highlighted actors of the 40s and 50s era in film.
My favorite topic.
Yep. I was just asking Nicole what she wanted to talk about on the show, and that was her pick, and I was like, can do. Anyone else would have said, oh, is it on Netflix? No, it's probably not on Netflix.
Yeah.
Unless it's Casablanca, it's probably not on Netflix.
You might have an easier chance on HBO Max.
Well, there you go. Yeah, see, yeah, even Peacock probably has, you know, It's a Wonderful Life. Or even that's like the 30s. So yeah, there you go. Movies are exclusive. The Criterion Channel, you know, you name it. So, Shout Factory. When you were getting into older movies, did you already kind of have a bunch of references and family or friends who got out of their way?
Honestly, it started, this is going to sound like so funny, but, I was 9 years old and I was watching, Three Stooges shorts and,
nice.
When you're nine, any of those things, like when you're nine, it's just like any like slapstick, like humor like that is hilariously funny. And I just remember like cracking up and having tears rolling down my face. But I didn't really like catch on too much to that. That was probably the only thing at that age that I was like interested in, like old wise. And then a few years later, Frank Sinatra kind of captured my interest, which I don't even know where that came from, but like I just was immediately hooked onto his music. There was just something about his voice that draws you in. Mm-hmm. And I just immediately like I had to like listen to his music on repeat. I started watching some of his movies when I was a teenager, and I just couldn't, like, it was like a full-blown addiction when I was a teenager. Like, that's where it really started, when I was, like, 15 years old.
Stellar. Yeah. I was pretty much that way since, like, I would just read any kind of film reference book, and I'd get all kinds of references, and, yeah, even just watching Saturday morning cartoons is, like, okay. But I know who they're referencing, even though I haven't seen any of their movies, and mm-hmm. You know, cable was great, and it was always fun to just kind of wait for it to air on even antenna channels. And I personally, yeah, around age 12, I was getting into any kind of movie, and I didn't necessarily even have a good judge of actual quality. I just always was kind of like, hey, let's check it out, you know, and just get together and make pasta and dinner and check out something that we might like or might not like or might be dumbfounded or might find interesting or worth a watch but won't really stay with us. But yeah, I mean, I can even remember just other just unusual video store finds that were just, sometimes they were just compilations of like old TV shows or just a bunch of shorts edited together into one feature length movie. And it was definitely interesting how, like you say, seeing the Rat Pack and just other comedy troops that have formed, like, yeah, Laurel and Hardy and Stooges. And but yeah, I was no stranger to any kind of Frank Capra kind of stuff. You know, my It's a Wonderful Life is still my father's favorite movie. And so, yeah, I watched a bunch of Jimmy Stewart westerns and mystery films growing up. But I also watched, you know, it's not hard to get into even just some of Hitchcock's just general stuff. So, you know, I would see plenty of stuff with Ingrid Bergman and Cary Grant. And, you know, Lucille Ball even tried it. I think that started the whole, maybe unofficially started the whole, you know, TV actors trying to become big major movie stars and then rebounding back to TV. And I kind of noticed that it really wasn't hard to even be some kind of, you know, B genre kind of person. And everyone kind of now when they hear B movie, they think, oh, you know, low budget, bad. And it's like, no, just you're a genre star, you know? So like Vincent Price does gothic horror movies. Katharine Hepburn does, you know, period pieces. You know, Clark Gable does romantic comedies. And, you know, Bogart does crime movies. And William Holden does a little bit of everything.
That's true. He did.
Political dramas, you know?
Yeah.
Here we got Vivian Leigh and Gregory Peck. And they kind of do a lot of comedy dramas or courtroom fillers. So, yeah. What's funny though, seeing that on this ranker list that Spencer Tracy's on here, I was at a San Antonio restaurant and there was a bunch of like classic movie star like photographs that was part of the theme, and it was so funny. I'm like, I know I've seen this actor. It took me and my sister were taking photos of the various people, and my father's replying back. He's like, I know you smart asses know who this is. And then I'm just like, this last person, I'm like, who is this guy? I know I've seen his movies, again, Bad Day at Black Rock and everything and all that.
Yeah.
What's it been in? He's like, Spencer Tracy. I'm like, okay, yes, see, there you go. It's just the
it was funny. I think it was like a couple months ago, I went to the TW, it's a hotel now. It used to be an airport.
Really?
But yeah, but they have pictures of like all on the walls. They have pictures of celebrities that had been on the plane at some point or another. But it's just like, it's like, I remember I just was like, because I went with my best friend. I was like, all right, just, you know, name anybody at all from like old Hollywood era, and I can guarantee I can tell you when, like, the year that they were born and the year they died. And she literally named every single like person that could pop up into her head, and I nailed it. And she was like, how do you know this information, like, why? And I'm like, I don't know. But, yeah.
Just, and then certain ones come, like Joan Crawford, you can probably name one of the noirs she's in, Fred McMurray, I'm sure you know him just from Double Indemnity, and yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you just need the one blockbuster movie they're in, and you're in. Like, you don't know who Lana Turner is, then you probably at least have seen L.A. Confidential, and you got the reference there where someone's mistaken for Lana.
Exactly. And most of the time, it's like they don't even ask for like these tidbits or these facts. I'm like, no, you know what though? You probably would like this. Let me enrich your life with this information about like Vincent Price.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
never seen anything else with Judy Garland. Yeah, well, you technically have if you've seen The Wizard of Oz, and I know that's the 30s, but come on.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, 40s is basically left over from the 30s, and then 50s, you know, like every era is building on the 40s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
post Dust Bowl.
What I like though with the 40s is like, compared to like the 30s and the 50s, is like they seemed really Hollywood itself. I could be wrong, But they presented themselves like they were very united, like, oh, we're going to war. We all have to, like, you know, support each other. And you know what I mean? It seemed very oriented.
It really is hysterical when you tell people, it's like, that is technically a war propaganda picture. I'm like, well, it's entertaining. I'm like, well, see, that's the thing. It can still be entertaining, but just don't deny it. It's in the background. There's a flag waving, for goodness sake. You know, there's the music cue. It's clearly, you know, the Yanks are going off to fight the Germans. And so, yeah, it is kind of funny how you have to kind of educate people on, like, some of the history. It's like, history is in every picture, regardless of whether you get it or not, or are aware of all the codes. Is like, and that's the other thing too, when you're talking about the ratings, is like, there's plenty of stuff which was, you know, sugar-coated or got a certain mature rating, and it wasn't even because of context, because, well, we don't agree with that portrayal, and kind of want. So yeah, there's a lot of these other conspiracy theorists that are out there also too, and I'm like, you're just now realizing this. We noticed that most of us have noticed this generally all our lives, but yeah, I don't know. Some people just don't. It makes you wonder if those were the ones who were asleep during history class. Is like, I personally was the one who read the back of the chapters, even the stuff that wasn't on the test. I would find
it. Yep. I was also the type of person, like, in school, I didn't find history classes that interesting, because they always, like, focused in on, like state history. You know what I mean? And it wasn't,
they wanted,
like,
to sum it up way too neatly, to where it's like, if it was that neat, we would still be learning from this. There's, like, five more layers to this. Like, a PBS documentary would have summed this up way better than what you're doing. And they would always want to go to, like, very outdated, generic stuff. I'm like, okay, so you want to do as much as what's on this generic, outdated VHS tape, you know, from an old library. I think we could find maybe a... Could you at least give us a Ken Burns documentary, something? You
know? Right. So it's just like, they gave us the, like... Oh, so the war started and ended and the end, and it was like,
not after many losses.
What happened in between? Yeah,
people got disease, like, eating canned goods.
Yeah, like, I want the nitty gritty. Tell me, like, everything that happened.
We didn't discover the Holocaust right away. That's the other thing too. Is like, there's so many other just ridiculous, like, everyone has to be given credit to everything. It's like, there's some books that don't even mention, like, the Allies and everything, like, working together. It's just like, okay, can you please sum up all of the countries who were working with us versus the ones we were fighting, you know? And, and you know, I'm not saying you got to give them personas, but you might as well choose some kind of narrative explaining why all of them have some kind of stake in the fight. You know, this is no different than a gambling tournament. You know, why are you on what side, and how'd you get here? And everyone wants to just speed towards the end. Just, again, it's kind of like a NASCAR race, but it's just a very lifeless one. It's like, everyone just wants to win. No one wants to actually explain why they're in it to win it.
Yeah. And I don't think that's really, well, that's not telling history for what it really was.
Totally. And clickbait is even worse than it probably was 20 years ago. And it's never really surprising to see that, you know, stuff you never knew. And it's just like, oh, we've known a bunch of this before. And it's just so funny how people are now deciphering certain lyrics. And even post Me Too is like, we're seeing even more sexually provocative, like, lyrics in some of those songs. Is like, well, yeah, pretty much everyone was singing about sex or something just very over the top that, yeah, we somehow missed it.
It's always been there.
It's always been there, and because it didn't have anything actually, like, explicit, people ignored it the first time, and we were even talking about, like, Bob Dylan, and that's, like, years later, you know, in the 70s and everything, and it's just like, yeah, he was saying a lot of graphic references, but because somehow it missed it, you know, the censorship didn't pick up on it. It's kind of funny what stuff you really don't even just generally hear, even I don't know if some stations are just, like, afraid to play them, because you're always going to get that kind of hypocrisy. It is kind of funny how Michael Jackson can be played 24/7 and other certain artists, oh, no go, can't play that ever, no, no.
It's very, I don't know, convoluted how, it depends on who it is, but it's like, oh, I'll talk about this, but I'm not going to go into full detail about what any of this, any of what happened. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to give you, the small things.
Totally.
Which is unfortunate.
If you know about him, great. It's like, well, you gave me an incomplete story if you can't even sum some of it up. It's wild. Do you think certain movie stars get a little more attention than the others? You'll see a lot of attention for someone like maybe Betty Davis or James Cagney, but then there's a bunch of others. I don't think, if I had to ask other random people here, I guarantee you I would probably get a bunch of, huh? Who's that? If I asked who Vivian Leigh was, or maybe even Errol Flynn, or someone might just say, oh.
I feel like a lot of times, yes, these are talented actors and actresses, but sometimes I feel like so much attention is brought on them that you don't actually see them for their acting ability.
Yeah, you like them for their looks. And I guarantee you, again, just with references, someone probably knows them just from a more mature cartoon like The Simpsons or Family Guy doing a recurring gag of it, or maybe Madonna mentioning Fred Astaire in one of her songs is like, yeah, but do you even know who Fred Astaire is?
Yeah.
He's a dancing performer in many musicals.
Yeah, and then the movie snobs that are I only watch the ones that quote unquote that matter, you know what I mean? I've watched Gone with the Wind, but then Clark Gable was in how many other movies out there that are still pretty damn amazing, you know, without being Gone with the Wind.
It's exhausting. And I mean, it's okay to just say, I haven't seen many of their movies. I've heard the name, I just never seen their movies. And unfortunately, I don't know if it's just people, I think it's more than just people being proud, afraid to admit that they don't know what they're talking about. But then I think it gets to where if you were to even just go over the extra mile and say, I just never gone around to see it. And it's are you going to see it? No. Well, maybe. It's no, it's yes or no. I'm not going to see their movies anytime soon. And it's okay. Something's going to frequent around. And I've noticed even there's been kind of a cycle of people who now look for long lost movies. It's eventually you're going to find some long lost movies that are from just decades ago, and they will be, yes, in the 30s, 40s, or 50s.
Yeah. Or even the 80s.
Yeah. It's the same cycle. Someone got too big ahead, and millions of dollars later, and in this case, back when it was different inflation here, just decided, hey, I'm not proud of this after all this hard effort and hours and sweat and tears. I don't think anyone would be entertained by this, but maybe they might, but I'm going to just store it away and until the studio burns down. I'm not going to let anyone see it. I always like reading those lists where they mention movies that have never gotten any kind of release, not even a Laserdisc or VHS release.
Yeah.
And yet they've been seen occasionally on some antenna channel. Someone had a copy.
I always found interesting is anytime that it's an actor or actress from the 40s that are extremely well known even to today, like we were saying, the Clark Gables or anything like that, there are so many actors that are so often overlooked because they just, they're, I don't know what the right word is, but like, their magnitude charisma. It isn't as big as it was back when they were stars. Like,
totally.
I love, Tyrone Power, and he's still a pretty, you know, he's big, but like,
how many people know him just for Zorro versus all his other like epics and romanticized swashbucklers?
exactly. Or like, do they know him from the original Nightmare Alley? You know what I mean? Like,
there you go.
Yeah, like he did have pretty amazing films back in the 40s, but he's often overshadowed because of Humphrey Bogart, James Cagney. You know what I'm saying? Like,
mm-hmm.
But he did phenomenal films back then.
Well, I think it is also kind of funny. I mean, before we started like recording this, guys, like we were even talking about just how everyone looks strictly at the Rotten Tomatoes meter, and it's like, you realize they're taking sources from like all kinds of sources, like an original TV guide and printed like retrospect review versus like a current, you know, highly promoted blog or something like that. No one thinks about that. It's like, yes, none of those reviews are going to entirely match up because they're going on who knows what, you know, like whatever stopped or began at a certain point, that's what a certain movie is rated on a certain site. And yeah, no one, when you explain to certain people, they just refuse to understand why certain people think a certain way. Is like, yeah, virtually everything you like was hated when it came out, and it's popularized on TV. Just repeat. Video stores became a big thing in the 80s, and here they are now. And they refuse to believe that. They just think everything is all streaming. It was always loved, you know, overnight. It was like, no. And I guarantee you, there's going to be stuff you'll see, you remember seeing somewhere on the telly, big or small screen, and you might not like it now for whatever reason. So, I mean, some stuff is only good like seeing once, and other stuff has instant replay value, regardless of its quality. And yeah, I think, I don't know, 40s and 50s films, I think, fall into that category of when people are creating more styles, more commercializing the industry more, and I mean, even just for independent pictures, I think they thrived as well because they were, you know, figuring out how to be even more craftier with their ads or have a lot of do-it-yourself mentality.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, and unfortunately, no one seems to really, I notice, like explore kind of the 40s and 50s like independent or even just trashy movies. They just seem to think, oh, Ed Wood's the only one. I'm like, no, there's plenty of other people besides him or Roger Corman. There's like, who lasted, you know, years, you know, he's like 96 now, and there's like, there's plenty of other groups who like would form all kinds of unusual movies and have to pay for the prints and advertising all themselves back in that era. But I guess it even just gets to, you know, where would you see these movies? And I don't know. I think if you want to go back like with decades earlier when people were rediscovering these, you know, it was hard to even find certain videotapes of certain pictures because, you know, all the mom and pop stores were kind of getting their rumps handed to them by, you know, the Blockbusters and Hollywood Videos of the world. So I think, I think there's plenty of other stuff that is continually just rediscovered because there's just all, I mean, anytime I go to a thrift store, I see just unusual rare titles that I've never heard of or that are under a totally different name. And I think it's a lot of fun because those tapes are going to continually get circulated around and rediscovered by someone. And
thank goodness for TCM.
And it's kind of funny how these movies kind of have some kind of curse mentality. They were meant to just kind of be discovered by an unknowing audience.
Yeah.
Appreciated then, they might be appreciated now. it's too late to tell the creator whether or not you liked it. They've been long time dead. Oh.
Yeah.
It is also fun to kind of, when you try to rank like the best performances of certain actors, and much like today, there's always going to be one picture they might be somehow on the record later in a retrospective saying they're not proud of, but it's even more fun just seeing when you talk with some in today's world, how many of the purists are going to just go only with what a certain movie site has claimed is their best. It's like, no, I'm going to ask you, what do you think is their best performance? And that's a lot of fun to just kind of discover a lot of stuff, because you're almost guaranteed going to encounter someone who has probably only seen like their top five often listed movies and not much else. And those that have might have trouble remembering the ones, unless it's, you know, they've seen them more often. And I do think it's this is why I do all these actor retrospects. I was like, anyone who I've seen a good chunk of their resume, let's do an episode on. And if you want to watch a bunch more to squeeze in before we do this, let's do it. If not, you know, let's take everyone at their word. It's even more fun. But I didn't really get this as much for the 40s and 50s as what I get now. Nowadays, I'll see so many people placed in a movie, but they're kind of in a nothing role or one that has very limited impact on the actual story, and it kind of feels like a waste of time. Mm-hmm. I didn't really get that as much with 40s and 50s films, as like every star pretty much is needed. And I don't know if it's just some mild coincidence or what, but I mean, however things were run with extras and the first five names on the poster to sell the picture. But definitely the case with poster childs in the 40s and 50s is like, yeah, I think everyone pretty much knows who the first five names are.
Exactly. And they don't really look into like beyond the five leading actors, which is a shame. Like, there's so many movies where like Charles Lane was in like over 100 movies, I believe, and he literally pops up in like all of these movies. Like, he's literally in It's a Wonderful Life, and you don't even like think of him because you're thinking, oh well, Jimmy Stewart or Lionel Barrymore is in that, you know what I mean? But he's in that, and he's in so many like countless classics,
right? And I mean, I even have to correct a few other people who are like, oh, James Dean was only like in three movies. I'm like, no, he was an extra for the longest time. You can spot him pretty easily in some of those other movies. It's a lot of fun to even spot them before they're famous for those eras, because at that point, they are often in a pretty pivotal scene running around in the background. It's a different world than how they did it.
Yeah, and I guess like I feel like they're like, well, if they're not in the starring role, then they weren't really in the movie almost.
Yeah.
But if they're giving like a monumental performance, like, I'm gonna notice, I'm gonna see it. Like,
there's different kinds of extras. I did a lot of extra work for a while, and I would get so annoyed when everyone would act like, I co-starred in a movie with so-and-so. I'm like, your scene didn't even make the final cut. And I was like, it's like, you can have fun with some of that. But I mean, there's a reason a lot of people who become famous will take that off their resume. Cause it's like, yeah, I mean, it's, you were part of it, but you kind of weren't. And I say, you know, if you're an extra, be an extra who's like, at least like handing someone a piece of paper, you know, or
have a little bit.
Seen being arrested in a police station or handing the football to the president, you know, in a political
film. Exactly.
Don't be.
Have something with it.
I was one of thousands of, you know, non-legible prisoners in a crime drama riot scene. I don't know.
Like, one of my favorite actors, and is not a very well-known actor, but whenever, like, most of his roles, he had a name. Like, he wasn't just, like, guy on the bus. Like, he had somewhat of a role. And, like, I remember seeing the first movie I saw him in, John Garfield overshadowed him, which I know everybody loves John Garfield, but I was drawn to him. There was like this magnetism about him that just made him so likable. And he actually, his name's Jeffrey Lynn. He was a pretty, I'm not going to say he was like an A-list actor by no means, but he, you know, he had a pretty good career before the war hit. And he starred in movies with like Betty Davis and Humphrey Bogart. Like, he had a pretty nice resume, like but he was never like that. But he was never always, I should say, like, he wasn't the lead actor in the higher or the more popular films. But no. to me, he always had an impact.
I would hope, but yeah, I mean, that's the other thing too. I mean, I think the reason a lot of these movies make a bigger impact is because, yes, you know, but before we had, you know, bigger budgets, and now we have all digital. Is like, again, you know, I have for a film class, you know, messed with 16mm is like, yeah, every, you know, time was money, you know. People did have to. And I get even more annoyed when I see people discussing certain predicaments with how people arrange things. It's like, well, what era? You know, are you going on how they did it in the 70s or 80s? Or are you going on, yes, like 40s and 50s?
Yeah. And
it just always never fails. Everyone wants to compare themselves to a certain icon and everything. It's like, well, you can claim to know the whole story, but you kind of don't have the whole story. You got like few other things.
That's kind of like what I found with the whole like method acting thing. Like, whenever anybody brings up about method acting, they're like, well, they'll bring up about like James Dean being a method actor, and then Marlon Brando
different
Brando
kind of
being
method acting in different kind of era. Yeah.
But it was all like their styles were all different. I mean, like, they were similar in some ways, but they were different. Like, if you watch a Montgomery Clift movie and you take Montgomery Clift out and just say put James Dean in it, it's not going to work.
Right.
Or like you do a John Garfield movie, because he, I guess, was the original method actor or whatever. If you took him out and you were like, all right, let's put Montgomery Clift in it, it's just, it's not going to work. Their style of acting was a lot different from each other. And that's what made him unique.
Oh, totally. I mean, on a Dean-related notion, I mean, look at Natalie Wood. She had a very unhappy, you know, upbringing and everything. She was pretty much reflecting her childhood on screen. And, I mean, then she's working with a method actor like, you know, Marlon Brando, and it's just kind of funny how people put up with his crap back then versus later on, where they were like, oh, he really is box office poison. It is kind of funny how, yeah, by that point, I think, yeah, in the 50s, officially, I mean, I get it. You know, Hollywood was owned by a lot of mobsters and studios, and there's any way, time where there's money, there's always, you know, much like Vegas, there's going to be some underlings who, you know, have some very shady dealings at heart. And it is interesting how, yeah, by that point, everyone's very overmarketed and can instantly, you know, become a sensation overnight or even just be destroyed just making something. And I find it very intriguing how, yes, those kinds of different method actors is like, there's plenty of them who kind of almost give me kind of a, how I look at some of the 70s bands, how even though they didn't have some kind of drug of that equivalent that they were necessarily on, some of them was kind of just not in the zone. And sometimes they just never left any kind of zone. They just kind of just walked in and did what they were going to do. And it's not like how it is now where there's all this other extra peer pressure and trying to get a gig based on a good, you know, demo reel or audition. It's like, you guys, mm-hmm. it has changed so much differently. Now it's not even based on a certain look. It's like these guys, they had to pretty much just whatever they saw, they could literally coast through being whoever they were on or off screen. And if asked why they were a good actor, they couldn't even tell you. It's like, people react to me. I somehow play to the camera. I think, yeah, the whatever methods or standards they are using, yeah, can't even compare with today's world. Like, I had an extra pal who I knew about who told me that with the Magnificent Seven rehash with Denzel Washington and Vincent D'Onofrio, a lot of those guys in character the whole time, but not the over-popularized type of acting that you kind of hear from someone like maybe Daniel Day-Lewis, where, you know, they don't even leave the set, completely in character. It's like, it was kind of more like some of those other character actors who've been known to do that. It's like they just reply using whatever harsh voice they're using, you know, in character, you know?
Yeah.
They can still have a regular conversation when cameras are on or off, you know?
So, right, exactly.
And I think that's the other thing. It just got a bad, it could be a bad PR thing for certain people who thought, oh, you know, that just means they're going to, you know, if they're playing a serial killer, oh, that must mean they're going to actually kill someone. Like, no, it just means some of them went overboard or offended someone who wasn't on their same level, or I don't know, maybe they did overdo it and they just need to be fired because, you know, this is all play and pretend. So.
Exactly. Like, that always makes me think of, I know this is not like 40s or 50s related, but method acting. Jared Leto is known for doing that. And he gets so intense about the character that he's portraying that he literally just is that character. Like, he's not himself at anymore during the filming. Like, he became, during Suicide Squad, he was portraying himself as that Joker. Like, there was no Jared Leto. Like, he was so invested in that role, he couldn't see beyond anything else but that.
You would hope, because, I mean, everyone wants to be something different. They don't want to be themselves. And it is funny how someone can be so good and yet, I think, I don't know, when everyone sees something extraordinary on screen, they like to also assume that someone is just as interesting as the characters they're portraying. Is like, sometimes they can be just an average Joe who has a certain talent. And I don't know, it's always so funny what celebrities that the paparazzi left alone after a while because they just couldn't get anything interesting from them. It's like, I got nothing to share with you, you know, nothing scandalous.
Exactly.
It is wild how they did the tabloids back then in the, shall we say, yes, 40s and 50s, because, yeah, it really was damaging.
It really was, and then it was so damaging to so many lives. I mean, they still are pretty bad, but,
and like, the minute it was printed, everyone thought it must instantly have been fact-checked, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Research be damned.
A lot of people back then, obviously, they weren't given the opportunity to, like, come out of the closet or whatever. Mm-hmm. And these tabloids would, like, jump on it and be like, oh, well, this actor was seen with this actor. And, like, it would destroy their career. And they would be like, so, like, what does who they're seeing have anything to do with their acting ability?
Right. And I mean, I'm sure you heard about the story about Clark Gable. You know, he was closeted, supposedly, same thing as Robert Mitchum. But yeah, apparently he like ran over someone, and like, I don't know who the authorities were that had like to bribe like some attorney to just like not even remotely consider that. It's like, I don't know if they paid the dead man's family or something, but yeah, I always heard about that. And it is kind of just wild how, I mean, it's kind of the same thing when you hear about sightings of certain things, and people are always so surprised. It's like, well, why didn't that get as similar attention in the 50s? It's like, well, people in the 50s didn't have Google Maps, or, you know, not everything got reported to every town, you know. It's like, we were more advanced than, say, medieval times, where, you know, you had carrier pigeon or something, but, you know, still not by much, you know. We got our sources from the newspapers and the radio, and, you know,
exactly.
Still a thing today. And there is really even funny seeing nowadays what some people are afraid to lose their papers or their radio. And it's like, well, I'm not sure about AM, because there's a lot of politics that like to get vented out on that end of things. But yeah, newspapers just couldn't keep up with the costs of the physical, you know, printing and everything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Stay green, and you know how it is. They also like to cut corners on paying their various editors. It is also, especially, I mean, speaking of pay cuts, it's especially funny seeing what films I find in the 40s and 50s, like, people can't even agree on who actually directed the whole thing. This is like, mm-hmm. Was it just two scenes? Okay, so then they're technically assistant director, you know?
Yeah, right?
There's like one title, I think, from the late 40s, and there's like three directors, you know, two of them are on credit, and only one got the credit, and you don't know if it's a typical Directors Guild BS where, like, he started the picture and then he got fired or died, or, you know, and then the other two people took over. You don't know what it is. And it's interesting though, because some people eventually cough it up. And I mean, IMDb, some people have to question some of the trivia and everything, but most of the time you can at least find someone citing like some film history book where someone turned it up. You know, someone heard it from some like friend of the producer or what have you, and just took that with a grain of salt. That was the research.
Exactly.
It's still even harder with even more recent independent films. Someone pretty much has to like been at like a Q&A panel at like at a festival or something. Just got the brain and they write it down. And I mean, I also get even more annoyed when people act like the filmmakers, you know, word is nothing to the critics and everything. Is like, well, you got two sides of this. Is like what they intended versus what kind of a movie it became or is considered. So, you know, I do that all the time with like certain genres and everything. It's especially more interesting with how many of these movies are successful, but they're based on books which have totally different tones or premises, and they like followed like that. They pretty much foreshadows the current predicament today, where only a quarter of a book is followed and the rest of it is related in name and premise only. And yes, with tone and whatever it's marketed as, you know, it's like you might have promoted it as a drama. We're feeling like this, the public considers this a comedy. So,
exactly.
As a result, it was awarded Best Comedy Movie of the Year or something like that. So, yeah, it's definitely interesting there how it takes a while for everyone to kind of be very, very outspoken. It seems like pretty much where I see reports of people not liking certain things, it's pretty much, I think, around the 60s and 70s where you start getting a lot of that people being unprofessional to each other, or saying what, you know, saying not so discreet thoughts about their newest project. So it is kind of funny how here in the 40s and 50s, You just didn't really even get their opinion. You know, they're just the equivalent of models on a billboard.
Basically.
Yeah. And It is funny though how, I mean, people had to sketch these photos, you know, and it's like, and do other specific photo devices that, you know, nowadays would be, you know, easily done in Photoshop and everything. And I think that's an art that's forgotten, or people know, but they keep letting themselves forget. It's like, they're like, oh, how hard can it be? I'm like, it was very hard. You know, you had to do this in a dark room. You had to photograph these guys, and you'd have these studio executives that, you know, weren't very kind and, like, especially very demeaning. Like, person's nose too big, or this person doesn't look like a soldier of war or a leading man. They're out of here. And I'm always guffaw when I see certain cartoons playing it up. I'm like, yeah, but, you know, it's kind of true. Mm-hmm. Everyone is a character. And sometimes, I mean, playing themselves, pretty much a character that, you know, not even a movie can sum up in just 2 hours.
Exactly.
What's your take on how people are arguing over movies of a certain length now? Like, back then they could be very self-indulgent. It was all they had. And now it's like death to a movie. How dare it be 3 hours? It seems like that's kind of faded after the 70s a bit.
I feel like it depends on what the movie is about. What genre it is.
I can't even come to think of it, even remember when they started 3 hour movies.
Yeah, I mean, I personally, if it's past like 2 hours, it can be a struggle if it's one of those movies where like nothing happens in between. Mm-hmm. But I feel like most movies that are like that length, they're that long for a reason. They have a story that needs to be told. You know, I can appreciate a movie for that length of time. Not saying my attention span's going to be there, but but I can appreciate it. I don't know. I'm probably one of those people that's like, is it 3 hours? We'll break it in half, and I'll watch an hour and a half now, and then watch the other half.
You got
an
hour to and a half later. Got to, man. Got to.
Yeah.
Sometimes it works better that way. You have an unofficial miniseries.
Exactly.
Oh, so, who do you think is just going to continually like be featured in museums and hopefully introduce a few people to the pictures that, you know, their grandparents grew up watching?
Like actor wise or?
Yeah, or just other just famous faces that you think are going to continually be referenced. Like, I see a lot of beauty queens or even just people in makeup will, for whatever reason, reference stuff that they claim is influenced by Greta Garbo. I'm like, really? Okay, interesting. So I see casual stuff like it here and there, but it seems like maybe I might see occasional like a fashion magazine that is going for like a Cary Grant kind of look. I'm like, okay, interesting. But it seems like that's as close as I get. Like, I don't really see any kind of references like in a cartoon or a pop culture, or unless it's like maybe at a library or a museum or some sort of expo.
I think I feel like it comes in waves. Like, I remember back in the 90s, like shoulder pads were like massively popular, and like Joan Crawford was like, that was her thing back in the 1940s. Like, that was mm-hmm. one of her like fashion hits. And like, I just feel like you get like that resurgence, like every, like right now shoulder pads might not be popular or whatever, but like give it a couple more years and I'm sure it's going to come right back. Like, it's the same thing with like, you were saying with like Greta Garbo, like that look is not like a huge popular thing right now, but like give it a couple more years, I'm sure it's going to like be just as popular as it was back in her heyday.
Right. It's a good question, because it does seem like, yeah, in waves, it's like, you just see it here and there, and people try to get, like, a statistics on it. It's like, it's kind of just whatever everyone's feeling.
Exactly.
Everyone wants to.
Like, I didn't think, like, acid genes were going to be a popular thing again, and
oh, yeah.
Here we are.
Here we are. Well, thank you ever so much for kind of just having a fun kind of pop culture sit down.
Yeah, anytime. It was fun.
Too cool. What are you going to be watching in these coming months? That you recommend to moviegoers?
Oh, and there's so many choices. Well, I'm going to say I definitely recommend Mildred Pierce. Probably Joan Crawford's the most famous role. But watching that movie, you can see why she won the Oscar. I mean, she's absolutely, like, fantastic in that. I would also recommend, not from the 40s, but Easy Living is one of my all-time favorite movies. It's nice. It's just a goofy, like, rom-com. It's superbly casted. It just, I believe it's directed by Mitchell Lyson. It's just a really goofy, funny movie.
Stellar.
Yeah, I like all movies, but I tend to gravitate towards more of the lighthearted movies.
Right.
And that's definitely one of them.
Something that doesn't anger everyone just sitting down watching it.
Exactly.
We'll return after these messages.
Hey, feeling down? Feeling low? Not enough podcasts about movies in your life? Why not try?
They must be destroyed on sight!
The new podcast cure-all, sure to get you right with the world and on a path to better living. We have exploitation, we have Italian horror, we have zombies, we have slashers, we have crime films, we have spaghetti westerns, we even have sci-fi and sex comedies. So take a dose of...
They must be destroyed on sight!
As needed, and let the hosts, Lee Russell, Daniel Harper, Paul Romali, and the odd guest host cure what ails you.
Warning, may cause atrophy, African consumption, black fever, bone shave, chin puff, colic, cramp colic, dropsy of the brain, elephantitis, grocer's itch, jaundice, mania, miasma, mortification, palsy, Pox disease, rheumatism, scurvy, St. Anthony's fire, summer complaint, and worm fit in some people. Consult a physician before listening.
Did you ever see a film at such a young age it left you traumatized with cinematic wounds?
Necrophilia.
It's a dead issue, man. Don't push it. Cinema Psyops is a weekly podcast documenting an ongoing experiment on the mind of an unwilling test subject.
No one should have to watch this movie.
Oh, no one should have to watch this?
No one should have to watch this movie.
Surprisingly, it's not a topic that a lot of people really want to tackle.
I'm shocked, prudes.
I know, really.
Right?
It's the next sexual frontier that no one wants to explore.
I am, in the most sincerest of senses, disappointed in you.
It takes a powerful goddess like Connie, jam her arm down the monster's throat and kill it. Oh, I'm still tripping out over that. Even as a kid, I was like, I gotta find a girl like that.
Every week, I get a new look of disappointment that I never thought I could get
it's
out of.
It's unimaginable. At 12 years old, you should not be watching this movie.
Obviously.
At 13, you should not be. 14, you should be. I'm not entirely sure even 17-year-olds should be watching this movie.
Just because you're offended by something doesn't mean that you have the right to demand that it doesn't exist.
Watching this film again, I had all of this, like, little nerd glee with everything that kept
little history
up.
Doll, yeah, popping up
absolutely.
At you.
So I totally loved this film.
Hey, I know why you know, couldn't see that. It's because your brain's warped watching this shit at 12 years old.
Yeah, this is a rough movie. I told you ahead of time when we were getting ready to do it that it was going to be a rough
movie. How did you watch this shit at 12?
Because physical wounds heal, cinematic ones don't. Listen to Cinema Psyops.
Hey, everybody. I'm Corey.
And I'm Zach. And we're the hosts of Podcasting After Dark, a cast dedicated to late-night horror and sci-fi of the 80s and 90s, often found on HBO and Cinemax.
You know, the movies your parents didn't want you watching as a kid. You can find us every other week on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, and Stitcher.
This is what you want.
This is what you get.
It's late, it's time, let's check our cue, baby. Pair it with a couple brews, baby. We love good movies. We love the bad ones too. So we watch them all and pass their lessons on to you. Oh yeah.
Bana 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 out. Bana 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 out.
Everything I learned from movies helps to make life a little bit groovy. Where the one last plot holes are gratuitous boobies. It's time to get busy with your friend Steven Izzy.
At EILFM.podbean.com.
We now continue with our program.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening.
It's a jacked up.